Are you ready?
Go.
Let's go.
Now circling in the neutral zone. Here's the pitch on the way. 36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot
is
just the dagger.
The neutral zone.
Oh, score!
Oh, my God!
This is as good as it gets.
The neutral zone is brought to you by the Ontario Para Network. Follow them online at onpara.ca.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Brock Richardson.
What's going on? It's time for another edition of The Neutral Zone. Coming up on today's show, we are rejoined by founder and executive director of Flex4 Access, Jess Silver. She will tell us about an upcoming webinar she is hosting. In the second half of the program, we will be talking about how to deal with pressure as most para athletes are in the stretch drive towards Paris 2024. I'm joined by Claire Buchanan and Josh Watson. Here come your headlines.
Neutral Zone Headlines.
OnPara is hosting a wheelchair tennis instructor workshop. This workshop, a Tennis Canada initiative, is designed to provide certified instructors and coaches, school teachers, recreational therapists, and other interested parties with the knowledge to teach wheelchair tennis to introductory players. The course will be taught by Tennis Canada National Coach for Wheelchair Tennis and three-time Paralympic medalist Kai Schramayer and Eli Schwartz, Community Outreach Manager of the Ontario Tennis Association. The course will take place on Sunday, April 28th from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. at the Sobeys Tennis Center at No. 1 Shoreham Drive, Toronto, Ontario. Cost is $79 for TPA members, $119 for non-TPA members. For more information, you can go to onpara.ca.
Former Toronto Raptors superstar Vince Carter and one-time NBA champion Chauncey Billups have been elected into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame class of 2024. Vince Carter was an eight-time All-Star and the NBA Rookie of the Year in 1999 with the Toronto Raptors. For any Canadian basketball fans out there, you know that there's a lot of NBA players that are currently playing because they were inspired by these exact players. So congrats to them both.
We also congratulate Team Canada's Brad Gushue for winning second place at the recent World Championships in Switzerland. Brad ran up against a buzzsaw in Nicolas Hedin, losing by only 1 point. The final score was 6-5. Listen, if I tell you about Nicolas Hedin and the run that exists with him, here's two stats that give you an idea of what kind of person and player Nick Hedin is. He now has the most victories at the World Championships at 162 and now 7 titles, which is the most of any skip worldwide. We also congratulate South Carolina, who finishes the job and had an undefeated season this year, 38-0, as they won the Women's National NCAA Championship by a final score of 87-75 over Iowa. This was an incredible game, led really by just extreme amounts of talent and understanding of the sport. It was so good to see both of these teams compete really well. Congratulations to South Carolina for an unbelievable season. Those are your headlines for this week. If you want to get a hold of us on social media, here's how you can do it.
And welcome back to the Neutral Zone broadcast booth.
Play ball!
We're set to get this bowl game underway. The first pitch is brought to you by Brock Richardson's X account at Neutral Zone BR.
Strike!
First pitch and a strike. Hey, gang, why not strike up a chat with Claire Buchanan from the Neutral Zone? Find her on X at Neutral Zone CB. There's a swing of the chopper out to second base right at Claire as she picks up the ball, throws it over to the first base for a routine play.
Out!
And fans, there's nothing routine about connecting with Cam and Josh from the Neutral Zone at Neutral Zone Cam J and at JWatson200. And the Neutral Zone is brought to you by the Ontario Para Network. Connect with them at ON Para Network. Follow them online at onpara.ca. Now that's a winning combination.
we are pleased to be joined by Executive Director and Founder of Flex 4 Access, Jess Silver, who has been gracious enough to sponsor another episode of our program. Today, she's joining us to talk about an upcoming webinar that her organization is hosting. Jess, welcome back to the program. Thanks so much for rejoining us.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
Jess, for our newer listeners and those of them that couldn't catch on our last episode that you were on, just give us a little synopsis again of Flex 4 Access and what the organization is and what you guys do.
So very excited to be here. For all of those new listeners, I am the executive director and founder of Flex 4 Access. Flex 4 Access is a registered nonprofit organization that focuses on prioritizing opportunities for adaptive fitness and sport promotion within mainstream settings. The organization was founded in 2017, and we are a nationally recognized nonprofit organization that has raised over $20,000 to date and has a number of partnerships with organizations and sports leaders and those in the fitness industry, all focused on delivering opportunities and knowledge mobilization or translation, as some of us call it, related to adaptive fitness and sport as a mechanism for physical disability and injury management. And I founded it because I myself have cerebral palsy and I'm an adaptive athlete, have been passionate about sports my whole life, and realized that there was a disconnect between the opportunities that exist for individuals like myself and really the understanding of adaptive fitness and sport as a way to manage a physical disability like cerebral palsy. So that is why I founded the organization.
Now, along with that, you are here today to talk to us about a seminar that you're hosting called Health and Fitness, Biz and Adaptability. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So I'm very excited to be hosting Flex 4 Access's first webinar. We've done a number of virtual events during COVID because, I mean, we've all been living in a virtual, you know, got used to living in a virtual world, and a lot of the activities of the organization transitioned or pivoted to be virtual from in-person activities. And so we hosted a number of virtual events and we realized that they were very successful. But one of the things that I've wanted to do as the executive director of the organization, and I've been working with a number of my colleagues and collaborators and realized that there's such a disconnect between the education and knowledge and awareness that exists between mainstream fitness industry professionals and those that work within adaptive fitness, or those like Claire who are in the parasport world, between those in the parasport world and those in the mainstream. So this webinar is focused on really aligning fitness professionals, and the goal is to have more mainstream fitness professionals in attendance to learn about adaptive fitness, what it means, and how, in fact, working with special populations should be looked at as an opportunity, not as a negative and not as an overwhelming case, but actually as a business opportunity for fitness professionals and gym owners or entrepreneurs that are in the industry to look at it as a way to supercharge their business.
Now, you and Flex 4 Access aren't running this seminar alone. You're bringing on some key people to speak and kind of connect the communities into your message. And can you give us a little rundown of who is going to be on that seminar with you and kind of what they do?
Yeah, I would love to. So I'm very fortunate to be a very well-connected leader in the adaptive fitness sort of offshoot of the fitness industry. I'm very fortunate, like I said, to be very well-connected and to work with lots of amazing people. And on the webinar on Thursday, we are very excited to be having James Murphy, who's the executive director of Parasport Ontario currently, joining us to be actually talking about how adaptive fitness should coincide more closely with parasport. Because for those listeners, I'm not sure who may not be aware, often parasport is separated from adaptive fitness. And through many conversations that we've had, we've realized that they really need to The understanding needs to exist that they need to coincide and they work hand in hand. So James will be joining us from Parasport Ontario, along with the National Director of Partnerships from Good Life Fitness, because Flux Praxis is also partnered with Good Life Fitness, and Brad Warren, who's the National Director of Partnerships, will be joining us to really tap into the business side of the fitness industry and looking at physical disability and disability as an opportunity for fitness industry leaders and those in sport to actually, like I said, supercharge and monetize their business and tap into what may be a new demographic for them. And then our last presenter and speaker or contributor who I'm hoping will join us or at least will provide us with content if he won't be able to be there as part of the webinar is strength and conditioning coach, who's a high performance strength and conditioning coach that has worked with NBA players and boxers, for example, and his name is Marin Golmak, and he's going to be speaking about the actual way that one should program adaptive fitness programming, working with individuals who are part of special populations, and really debunking that fear or demystifying the fear and stigma around working with individuals who have disabilities, that it may be new for fitness professionals, but looking at it as an exciting opportunity, as an opportunity for growth for them. And then I myself will also be doing some speaking, hopefully not most of it, as the executive director of Flux for Access, and also someone who is an adaptive fitness personal trainer and myself has a physical disability.
You've touched on it a little bit, but can you elaborate on why it's so important to put on a webinar like this one?
I'll share with all the listeners here and with all of you right now that, in fact, I had a meeting this afternoon and we were talking about in that meeting largely what came up were the gaps between opportunities for individuals that have the physical disabilities to engage with adaptive fitness or parasport versus the opportunities that exist for Paralympians, for example. So those athletes who are not competitive but still want to engage, that's one gap that exists. And then the other major gap is, you know, opportunities almost being almost non-existent if it wasn't for the leadership of organizations like mine, Flux for Access, and like OnPara, which provides opportunities for adaptive sport, the knowledge and the opportunity would not exist. So the reason why this webinar is so important is firstly to provide more of these opportunities for adaptive fitness and sport more readily, making them available and hopefully more accessible. And secondly, to educate the professionals and also new and up and coming professionals maybe. Like when I think about it, I think about educating students, for example, and my organization takes on a number of placements with university and college students who are focused on sport promotion, health promotion, and kinesiology. And, you know, from my experience, I've heard and I know that largely in college and university, they're lucky to maybe have one unit of content focused on disability. And they don't have practical knowledge and insight from leaders such as myself and my colleagues. So the reason why it's so important is to actually present this as a real life opportunity and allocate importance from professionals and from individuals like Claire, who are gracious enough to join us on a number of our events to speak to its importance and really speak to how, in fact, organizations like Flux for Access change lives for those with disabilities.
You touch on so many great points of the seminar, bringing awareness to important conversations. Now, once the seminar is completed, what do you hope to achieve moving forward? What are the goals to come out of this seminar?
I hope that this webinar will continue to amplify and strengthen partnerships with our current partners. So organizations and fitness facilities that we're currently partnered with and professionals that we're currently partnered with to be able to deliver more and more exciting and increased opportunities for adaptive fitness in sport. Hopefully, it'll also garner engagement with larger and more diversified ways for us to fundraise as a nonprofit organization. And also, the hope is that we hope this won't be, you know, a one-off webinar. We hope that the webinar, we can create a library of interesting content that professionals will be able to engage with and learn from. And we hope that we'll be able to do this bi-monthly, if not monthly, and focus on a variety of different topics and bring in really interesting guests. But really, the goal is to continue to leverage and amplify really dynamic, strong, and exciting partnerships for our organization to continue to grow and to deliver its mandated activities.
Fantastic. For those of us who want to learn more about you or the organization, the webinars that might be coming up, where can people go to find that?
The easiest way to learn about everything that you just mentioned, Josh, is by visiting our website, www.flexforaccess.ca. We have a very robust website that talks about everything from the organization's mandate to a little bit of background on me and the organization's board and what the organization does, program recipients, as well as exciting events such as this webinar. And for those who might be interested in purchasing their ticket, if I haven't contacted them directly because they're not currently partnered with the organization, a way that somebody can actually go right now and purchase their ticket for Thursday's webinar happening at 7:30 on April 11th is by going to the news and events section of our website and clicking on the event for the Health and Fitness Biz webinar, and then it'll bring you to the Eventbrite link. Now, I have a feeling one of you is going to ask where the link is going to actually be for the Zoom webinar. The answer to that question is there will be a Zoom link that will be sent out to those registrants that register for the webinar. When I say register, I mean purchase their ticket for the webinar. So once you register, probably on Wednesday, we will send out the Zoom link for the actual webinar itself.
Jess, it's been such a pleasure having you on the program. And, you know, it goes far beyond the gracious efforts of you and the sponsorship. We love having you on, and I just want to put this out there publicly. We wish you nothing but the best for the seminar. In fact, I am likely going to join myself just because I am intrigued by this interview. And also, I just want to say that our door is always open. And if you've got something you wish to promote, you know where I am, you know where I exist, you know where Claire exists. Just let us know. And we'll be happy to get you on because I believe in what you're doing as the organization. And there's not enough people out there in the world like you that are championing the initiative of, hey, people with disabilities should be aware of fitness. And it's as simple as that for me.
Thank you. I actually have a question for all of you based off of what you said, if you don't mind. Speaking about, you know, having me on and us talking about other topics and engaging in stimulating conversation or important conversation, do any of you feel like there's a topic that you'd like to cover in the near future where you feel like my expertise and background and passion for adaptive fitness and sport can be of value to that conversation?
I mean, there's always plenty. The one that comes to my mind is why people in the disability community are so afraid to take that next step in being able to work with physical fitness. And so maybe that could be kind of a roundtable discussion we have in the future and sort of bounce that one around. That one comes to my mind. I don't know about the other for you other two, but for me, that's the first one that comes to my mind.
Yeah, I think that's a great one.
Claire, what about you? You're really quiet today, or it's just Monday.
No, I agree. I think the start of any good conversation is that first step. And Brock, I think you hit it on the head that taking that first step is sometimes the hardest part, especially someone with a disability kind of putting their foot forward into the able-bodied kind of crowded space that is the fitness world. So yeah, that'd be a great starting point for a conversation.
I actually just thought of another one we could potentially engage in is, why do we all still feel that there is a divisiveness between the opportunity that exists for those of us who are adaptive athletes or leaders in, you know, like I said, the field of health promotion for those who have disabilities versus the mainstream? Because really, there shouldn't be.
No, I agree 100%. Basically, folks, what this means is we're going to be staying connected with Jess. We literally just came up with two topics in a matter of seconds, and Jess's question was not a scripted one. So, I mean, there are many more that I and the four of us, including Cameron, could probably come up with. So, Jess, this will not be the end, certainly. We will have you on, but best of luck with the seminar, and we greatly appreciate
you. Thank you very much, and I hope to have many of your listeners join us. So again, Thursday, April 11th, that's this Thursday, from 7:30 to 9 o'clock. And the link will be sent to those who register. Thank you very much. Stay strong and flexing, everybody.
The Neutral Zone is brought to you by the Ontario Para Network. Connect with them at ON Para Network. Follow them online at onpara.ca.
So, to start this portion of our talk segment, if you will, of our roundtable portion of the show, I just wanted to shout out the South Carolina a little bit more. I wanted to shout out the woman on South Carolina that really did a wonderful job, and that's Camila Cardoso, and she led the way with 15 points and 15 rebounds. I know both of you probably had some level of opportunity to check out the game. Just quick thoughts from both of you. Claire, start with you.
Yes. So on Sunday, I won a league championship with sledge hockey, and then I got in my car and I raced home to watch this specific game. I caught the last 10 minutes. So I think going into this season, obviously everyone was looking at Iowa and South Carolina, seeing what they both can do. Iowa last year knocked South Carolina out of the tournament. And yeah, when you talk about specific players on the South Carolina team, they had no returning starters this year. Not one returning starter coming into this season. And that just shows not only the coaching that they have behind Don Staley, but the culture that they're creating there at that school. It's very much giving UConn back in the day vibes with their women's program, where they just went, I think at one point they were two straight seasons back to back undefeated. And South Carolina is creating that culture. They are the team to beat, whether you have a Caitlin Clark on your team or not. All the power to them. Congratulations on an undefeated season. Like, that is unreal to accomplish. So, yeah. It was a very exciting game. I wish I could have caught all of it, but the last 10 minutes were just as exciting of a game as the rest of the game and the tournament.
It was mind-blowing to watch. It absolutely was. I had the chance to sit and watch the Iowa-UConn game, which preceded the Iowa-South Carolina, and even that game was shot for shot, block for block. Paige Beckers and Caitlin Clark for their respective teams just going at one another. It was incredible. I am not the world's biggest college basketball fan, men's or women's, but with Zach Edey on the men's side, and in particular Caitlin Clark and Paige Beckers and all of the names that you have on the women's side, I really paid a lot of attention to the women's program this year, and it was some of the best college basketball I've ever watched over that whole tournament. And I just think it's absolutely remarkable that we sat here, and at least for me, we went into that game hearing all about Caitlin Clark and the individual records she had set, including I believe it's most points scored, male or female, in college basketball history. And then we get to the final game and it's like, oh, by the way, South Carolina's undefeated. I'm sorry, what? How was that not the lead here? It was just, it was nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't, I'm like you, Josh. I watched the beginning of March Madness and I watched the end, like from the Elite Eight onwards. I kind of, okay, now I'm going to tune in and watch the first, you know, couple of days because there's upsets everywhere. And that's the thing. I got to this final game and I didn't know that South Carolina was undefeated, until the pregame show. And it was like you, Josh, it was like, pardon? This is bigger than Caitlin Clark, because you're talking about a whole team. And we all know how difficult it is to go undefeated. And so for me, I didn't give South Carolina a chance before the pregame show, saying, you know, Caitlin Clark's going to do Caitlin Clark things and it's going to be what it is, until they went, oh, yeah, but South Carolina's undefeated. And I'm like, well, now we're talking a whole different scenario, because it was. And I mean, Iowa got out to a 7-0 lead and you kind of just was like, okay, this is what I expected Iowa to do. But then, you know, South Carolina just said, hey, remember us over here? We're undefeated. You know, we're no joke. And this is the way we're going to look at things. And it was an incredible, incredible game. I also just want to, before we move on to our other topic, I also just want to shout out the fact that last year's final had about 9 million people tune in. And then the Final Four game that Iowa was a part of, they topped out at 16.5 million people. And I think their average audience was something in the neighborhood of 14 million from start to finish. Claire, a lot of people said the women's bracket was better than the men's, which I agree with. But what do these numbers say to you on the college basketball front, but as women's sports on a whole, since you're here today? And just give me some thoughts on that.
Well, you're seeing it in multiple sports right now, that if you give women's sports the platform and the viewership, the opportunity to put it in front of people's faces to watch, people will tune in. And people are tuning in to women's sports in some sports more than they are tuning in to men's pro sports. You see it with the PWHL happening, and now with NCAA basketball getting the limelight that it deserves. We can look back 2 or 3 years, and if you follow the college basketball women's players, 2 or 3 years ago, they showed up to the NCAA tournament and they had one dumbbell set offered to them to share. Every team had one dumbbell set to share for the entire tournament. And now they are getting what they deserve. They're getting the same viewership. They're getting the same training. They're getting the same locker set up as the men are. And it's so fantastic to see, because as someone in a similar position where you're finally getting the support that you deserve, you can take a breath and you can finally just be an athlete. And these kids, they're kids at these tournaments. When you think about college sports, these are kids turning into adults, and it's just fantastic to see that they are getting the support that they have deserved all along. Because women's basketball has been this good for a very long time. We just haven't seen it.
Yeah, it hasn't gotten its due ever. I was actually going to bring up exactly what you did about the controversy a few years ago about them not being treated the same as the men. If these players in this student crop are any indication of what's to come, holy crap. And don't even come to me with the argument that men's sport is better than women's sport. You're out to lunch. You're out to lunch if that's still your opinion. You have not been paying attention. You have had your head in a sand like some kind of ostrich. Whether it's PWHL hockey, whether it is WNBA basketball, whether it is women's college basketball, NCAA Final Four, women's sport is incredible to watch. And they have not gotten the due they deserve. They should be featured right alongside the men. And I don't know how else you can make the argument other than to say, here's the numbers. Here's the people that have tuned in for this. And do the likes of Caitlin Clark and Paige Beckers and Cardoso all help that? Absolutely, of course they do. But the talent has always been there. It's always been there. And it's about time it gets recognized.
100%. I mean, you look at this and you say, where are we? Well, we're in a position where women's sports in general are becoming on the forefront. I mean, I'm going to say something that's probably going to make both of you laugh, but I'm being dead serious. The best chance that Toronto has a chance to win a championship is PWHL Toronto. Like, let's call it what it is. That is the best chance that Toronto has a chance to win a almost certain, not certain, but a chance to win a championship. And I don't want to hear the argument, oh, there's only X number of teams. I don't care. Don't care, because you literally have to play who's in front of you, and that's what you have to do. And I don't want to hear the whole conversation of where this is and what's here, what's there. Respect it, because that's where it is. I'll be honest with you. I can't, off the top of my head, sit here and tell you who's in the men's final as we record this. I know Purdue's in it. But the second team, I can't think of it off the top of my head. And it's because I don't really care that much. I'm going to watch it because it's part of my job. It's part of what I do. But it doesn't move the needle for me that much, Claire. And that speaks volume about women's sports and women's basketball.
It absolutely does, because Purdue is playing last year's champion, UConn. So that just right there goes to show just how much of the limelight that women's basketball is stepping into right now. Because, I mean, last year's champion is not the story right now. It's who won the national championship for the women's tournament and what Caitlin Clark is doing and what Caitlin Clark is not doing. It's not, oh yeah, UConn can go back to back this year and they have to go through a superstar Toronto man to do it. But it's, I will definitely be up watching this final, cause I hope our Toronto boy, brings it home. And I think Purdue hasn't been in the national championship game or won it since the '80s. So, I mean,
1980.
Yeah. That's a really exciting storyline, and hopefully our Canadian boy can do it for us.
I will be perfectly honest with you guys. If it wasn't for the fact that Zach Edey was playing in this game tonight, I'd be watching the Jays home opener and probably screaming at my television because they are probably going to lose.
I would be doing the same thing, but Zach is leading the way. He's going to have an entire country watching tonight.
The final, Josh, doesn't start till 9 p.m. Eastern as we record this. So you do have about 2 hours to scream at the Toronto Blue Jays, okay. But it's fine. It's all good. No worries.
Oh, fantastic.
You can also flip to the Leafs and Penguins, but the Leafs have already clinched their playoff spot. So just scream at the Blue Jays for 2 hours and then watch the final. No problem.
Can Crosby drag the Penguins into the playoffs?
Kicking and screaming.
Well, as we embark on the last half an hour or so of this podcast, I want to discuss this last topic here, and as has been well documented, I do speak for a living. I promise you, I've been tripping over my tongue all day today. I'm gonna blame it on the eclipse because that's where we are. But yeah, as has been well documented on this program, I did go to two Paralympic Games, once in 2008 in Beijing and once in 2012 in London, England. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what athletes go through at this point in that final stretch drive towards the Paralympic Games, in this case in Paris. This can be a very exciting time, and it can be a time that leads with a lot of optimism, but it can also be a time that leads with a lot of anxiety. So for me, I wanted to bring this up and just sort of let people know that this is the time where a lot of coaches, athletes are filling out, you know, some crazy forms and the things that the Canadian Paralympic Committee and worldwide say you must do this, you must do these modules that tell you, you know, if you take drugs, your career is going to be sewered, and they got to go through all the hours and hours and hours of doing this. And this is a lot of time and effort and anxiety. It's been a little bit of time for you, Josh, since you've kind of stepped away from ice hockey. I know you're still doing field, but has there been a time where you have felt a certain level of anxiety, and how have you dealt with it in the moment? And Claire, I'll be jumping right over to you with the same question when Josh is finished.
Yeah, for me, it definitely is the start of playoff season in hockey. That's where the most stress always comes in, because you go from, oh, well, we're going to go out and we're going to play a game, to, okay, this game means something. If we don't win this game, we're moving on, or we are not, depending on how we do. I've also had opportunities where I've gotten into games in playoffs where we've gone to, I think the longest one was 16 skaters in a shootout to decide a semifinal. That one was a little stressful. And basically all I was able to do, because I didn't know what else to do, was just say, okay, I have to take this one shooter at a time because I'm the goalie. And so if I don't make the save, the next person in line for my team has to score or we lose. So it's literally just one skater at a time, one shot at a time, just focus on making one save. And that was really all I could do, because I knew that this is for a chance to move on. And I think we ended up in second position in the league that year. We didn't end up winning our championship, but as far as I was concerned, that 16-round shootout was the championship. So it just ended up being what it was. But yeah, that was probably the most stressful, aside from a tournament game in Brampton one time, where there was a team from Russia that somehow decided that it was a C-level team, and I got to play against them. Thank goodness I wasn't in goal for that one.
I have no idea how goalies do it in general, and let alone a 16-man shootout. That's just that sounds like a lot of anxiety and nerves. Absolutely. I have been taught over the last little while, just by teammates and coaches, that excitement, the feeling that you get when you're excited and when you're nervous, is pretty similar. And it's all about how you perceive it and what you kind of turn that into. And so I've learned to turn my nerves into reassurance. And I think that athletes going into a situation like Paris, and when it's kind of crunch time right now, that are feeling that anxiety, hopefully are reminding themselves that you got yourself there by working hard and staying committed to the process, and kind of your goals are being met. You're headed to Paris. So I hope that the athletes out there are kind of looking at those nerves and excitement in a good way, and not channeling or letting kind of those doubtful thoughts come in, because those any athlete at any level will tell you that the mental game can get you at any moment, and you can prepare as much as you can physically and go through the reps in your sport as much as you can. But the hardest part is definitely keeping those doubts away. So I hope those athletes are doing a good job and getting the support that they need. Because even in individual sports, like Josh, you're a thrower. You're throwing by yourself and you're alone out there. But when you're training and kind of doing the work behind the scenes, it's you're not alone. You have a lot of people supporting you and making sure that you're feeling good. So, yeah, I hope those athletes are gearing up and are in a good state of mental health right now.
I think for me, as I put this question down and then pondered it, because I often, and I'll pull back the curtain here a little bit, I often put things down and I think, am I going to answer it or am I just going to let my panel do the work and then I'll just move on to the next topic?
Not when you start off with, I've been at two Paralympic Games. Yeah,
and that, to your point, exactly. That is exactly the reason, because I don't think either of you were going to let me off with just moving on to the next topic and that'd be that. But for me, I had a lot of stress and anxiety. And Claire, I smiled a bit when you were talking about this whole, you know, channeling your nerves into excitement. Yeah, I remember that. But do you know how hard that is to do when people are like,
it's one of the hardest things on the planet to do as an athlete. Absolutely.
Yeah, and like the way that Claire said it, folks, I'm like, yeah, she just made that sound really easily, but it's not that easy. And it's tough, and it's just the life that you live. And I mean, I know that qualifying for both of those Paralympic Games was one gut wrench after another. It was like, if I don't make this shot, this is going to mean we don't go, or we do go, or whatever it ends up being. Now, we were on the side of both times that I was eligible to go to Paralympic Games. We qualified and we were able to go. But then becomes that whole different pressure of like, now I'm here. Now I got to perform, because now there's 6 or 7 or 8 athletes, how many ever there were at the camp, that would have loved to have been there, but I took the spot, and so now I gotta, you know, prove that this is where I can be. And I we talked about this a little bit as a headline last week, but the bocce program just came back. The BC1 and BC2 team came back, and they did not qualify, as we mentioned, as a team, but some of them will qualify as an individual. And my dad is the coach of that team, and I said to him, so basically what happened in a professional, nice way. And he said, too many athletes were putting too much pressure on their given shoulders. And when that happens is when you put that pressure on and each of you share that pressure and you wear it in your own way, you can't perform in the same way. And so it goes back to what Claire is saying about channeling, you know, your nerves for excitement instead of, you know, the excitement and then spinning it back into nerves. Like it is, it's really a web that you weave. And I know for me, it was really, really tough to handle. And people would know right away when I would be in the good frame of mind, you know, getting right down to breakfast, where people would be like, oh, has he got his, you know, is his disability acting up with his reflexes in different parts or what's going on? People would know right away. And so for cerebral palsy, it's very easy to tell what frame of mind people are in just by the tone of their voice. Well, so let's look. Go ahead, Josh.
I was just going to say, I think one of the biggest challenges, at least for me and the two of you being more high performance, maybe you can tell me what your experience was. But for me, I don't get training on how to deal with those nerves. When I'm in that shootout, I'm just sitting there going, okay, how the heck am I going to handle this? and I have to come up with it myself. Whereas it's my hope and my understanding that as high performance athletes going to these events, you're at least given a little bit of training on that. And the second thing would be that,
you know, Josh, you're absolutely right. Like at the high performance level, when you get to Team Canada in any sport, you do have those supports. There's mental health coaches, and hopefully your coaches, head coaches are running you through, not only running through sessions to make sure that your mental health is good and you know how to prepare and make a routine. That's the biggest thing. One of the biggest things that comes out of those conversations is make a routine, a mental health routine or pregame routine, so that you can kind of feel safe in that routine and channel those things the right way. And when I saw this conversation topic, it immediately started have me thinking that about the pandemic, and that we went through the pandemic and had Paralympic and Olympic years run, and speaking with athletes that were at those games and speaking to them now going into their next quad of games is that they're excited to have people in the stands. They're excited to have their families there. Like these next couple Paralympics could be kind of a breath of fresh air for these athletes, because they went one or two Paralympic games there, summer and winter, that the crowds were empty. The stadiums were empty. There were so many restrictions. So I really think that Paris and Italy in 2026 is going to be kind of like a fresh new start, and kind of these athletes that did go before can kind of get the true experience. For a lot of those athletes, it was their first Paralympics during the pandemic, and they didn't get that true experience of what being at the Paralympic Games is.
The biggest focus, Josh, to answer your question, in both of our Paralympic years that we went, was mental prep and how you can handle that. I mean, we brought a sports psychologist with us to both Paralympic Games, but the sports psychologist can lead you to a point, and the point they can lead you to, he or she, is to where they can do that. But then you also have to put on your own shoulders, putting in the work, doing the work. And once again, Claire makes a routine sound so very easy when she uses the word.
I have been doing it. Let me just, I don't ever really put my age out there. I have been a high performance athlete for close to two decades. It does not happen overnight, guys. It definitely doesn't. I am far from a rookie in the high performance world, and it has been, I don't want to say drilled into me, but it's repetition. You do it over and over and over and over again. And yes, at some point it does become just routine and something you don't really have to think about.
And you learn what works for you. What works for you might not work for Brock, might not work for me.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. It is not a cookie cutter way to navigate sport.
No,
for
it's
sure.
It's not. And it's, I mean, I went through six routines in my career and don't really know if I ever found one that was the one. Sometimes I'd take parts of one and put it into another and see if that would work. And it's time off the court that you look at. I mean, Claire, you talked about crowds, which led me to think, you know, when we went for our first Paralympics in 2008 with the team that I went with, we were like sold out crowd at a bocce event, pardon? Like we didn't know what that was like, and we had to really adapt really quickly to hand signals because you couldn't verbally communicate with your teammates on the court because people were making loud noise and they were cheering and we welcomed it, but it was that moment of like, oh my God, there's 3,000 people here. Like, where's this noise coming from? Because bocce is such a sport where it's like, shh, be quiet. You got to hear a pin drop. And then you go internationally into the Paralympic Games and you're thinking to yourself, where did all these people come from? You know, and I think that's...
Are they in the right place?
Yeah, did they buy the wrong ticket? That's. But no, I think Bocce over the course of the time that I've been a part of it has grown in popularity, but certainly not not to the level we saw in Beijing in 2008. So very, very cool stuff. And I wish everybody a ton of luck. I know the swimming trials have had to be moved for at least the paras. I'm not sure about the Olympics, but at least the paras, because the Olympic Stadium in Montreal, which housed their training, had a fire in it. So a lot of the events were going to take place there, and now it's like, whoop, now we can't have this because we have X number of renovations to deal with. So there's those factors that are happening right now as well that's Pivot. Going on. I mean, I look at wheelchair basketball. Do I think both of those teams are going to qualify next week by getting a top three finish? Yes. But this is one of the creme de la creme sports that exists. And if Team Canada doesn't send teams there, there's going to be some eyes raised of like, what happened here? So there is some pressure going on with the money that gets poured into Wheelchair Basketball Canada. Do I think they're going to get there? Yep, I do. But there is a level of pressure because their spot has not been solidified as of yet. And it has been a bit quicker in the last Paralympic Games than in this one. So there is a level of pressure existing there as well. Claire, you've been in the wheelchair basketball realm. Any quick comments on that program, thoughts, feelings, wherever you want to go?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much time we have. We could have another episode on
9 minutes.
But...
9 minutes.
Yeah, I wish both teams good luck in the tournaments that they are heading into this month to claim their spot for the Paralympics. There's a lot of talent on both teams, and the game has just gotten better and better. So, yeah, good luck to them. And it will be interesting to see what happens. And I would like to hold my comments until we see the results of these, because there's definitely conversation around both programs and what has happened and who's retired, come back, all that in the last few years to chat about. But yeah, I hope they do well, and we'll see.
I agree with you, and I'm very curious to see the women's side of things with the new head coach, and it looks like they have a very veteran team that they're taking, which is a bit interesting to me. But as you said, congratulations and good luck to both. Hopefully we have some good news to report on very soon.
I just love throwing little nuggets Claire's way, because she has this way of being like, yeah, so I'm gonna reserve my comment, but this is why. So yeah. I look forward into delving into some of those conversations. Hope we don't need to, because I think if we need to delve into the conversation, it means one thing and one thing only, and I don't want to delve into the jinxing right now. I believe in some superstition, so I'll leave it there. But just know that that Claire's comments definitely raised a bit of an eyebrow for me, and that what's going on here. And I mean, you could talk about the new coach on the women's side. We've done it before. I think there's a lot obviously going on there that we don't need to have a discussion on. But this is a very veteran team, and Josh, to your point, I think it's a veteran team by design, because you have a new coach who really can probably only do so much going into this event. If I was in those shoes, I'd be like, ladies, just go and play. And if there are ways that I see that I can help you improve, then I will. But I'm going to lean a lot on my veterans in this program. Not that I'm trying to come across as I'd be a lazy coach, but it's just that how much can you implement when the announcement was like less than 10 days ago of this coach? You know, I think it's just, you got to let your horses run. And this is where we are. And could it result in great things? Sure. Could it result in a disaster? Sure. And we'll see. But I would believe wholeheartedly in leaning on your veterans and seeing where things go. That tournament gets going next week, And so we'll keep you fully apprised of what goes on there as well. As we wrap up the program, we're not going to get a lot of time to talk about the Toronto Blue Jays as a whole. But I just want to throw out the stat to both of you as we end the program and see what you say. The Toronto Blue Jays are the first team in modern day MLB history, so 1901 and beyond, to be victimized of a no-hitter and one hitter in the first seven games of the season. As the as the newly baseball fan,
yes, you were.
Claire, as you've been building on this program, what does this mean to you as you listen to that stat?
I mean, not the start that we were expecting. We had a conversation with our baseball experts not too long ago, and there was some promise to this season, and I think there still is. I'm very much one that is like, I hate hearing, oh yeah, it's just the beginning of the season, blah, blah, blah. These games don't matter. No, every game matters. You got to get into the playoffs with a certain record. You got to win games. It's got to get done. So it's just frustrating. And I guess this might turn into the result of putting way too much money into your stadium instead of your actual team that's on the field.
Ooh. fun topic right
there. We could have done a lot better shopping, maybe.
I agree with you on both parts. Every game is important. Every game needs to be approached with a we need to win this game kind of attitude. But it's the first seven games. And I'm sorry, but the game in 1901 was very different than the game in 2024. So whether it's a pitch clock, whether it is bigger bases, whether it is any of the things that have been fiddled with over the last 100 years, 100 plus years, the game is not the same. So let's everybody take a breath. Pitchers always take a little longer to get ready for a season than hitters do. So the fact that they were no hit is not good. It's a sign that there's some changes that need to be made, but there's going to be success here. It's just taking longer to show up than we expected. We can't go 162-0, folks. I'm sorry. No. It just doesn't happen.
And ask the Rays, who got off to that unbelievable start last year. They had 18, 19 games in a row, something like that, and still didn't win the division. They should have with that kind of start, but it just goes to show the point exactly. I literally have 2.5 minutes that I need to squeeze my thought in. This is 10 games, all right? Yes, there are some habits that don't look great, that don't feel great, but this is 10 games. I truly believe there is something to be said when you finally get home and you finally play games at home. They are playing teams that are well under 500 right now, did not get off to great starts either in the Colorado Rockies and some other teams that will be following in after them. They are going to get into a stretch of games. They should do a lot of winning than losing. Yes, they are playing the New York Yankees on this homestand, but that's the only real big, great team that we're playing this year or this homestand. So I do think there are situations where you can make some hay, but those other teams have some veteran pitchers as well that know what they're doing and all those things. So I think we just need to all take a big deep breath and understand that the home portion of the schedule is different. It lends itself different. And I agree with you, Claire, when you spend $400 million on a renovation on just the lower bowl, not even talking about the upper bowl, that's a lot of money. So you got to put the team on the field to match that. And I know it's all, most of it's funded by Rogers, all that, but let's put a team on the field that means something, that does something for us, because 2015-16, when we had that good run, seems to be getting further and further in the rear view, and we need to see things change. So the home portion of the schedule starts tonight as the Seattle Mariners come to town. Let's see where things go, but it is a matter of taking a deep breath and moving on. With that said, that is the end of our program for this week. I'd like to thank Josh Watson, Claire Buchanan. I would also like to thank our technical producer, Mark Afolo. Stay tuned for next week because you just never know what happens when you enter the Neutral Zone. Be safe, be well.
The Neutral Zone is brought to you by the Ontario Para Network. Connect with them at ON Para Network. Follow them online at onpara.ca. Now that's a winning combination.